Welcome into this Thursday edition of Faith and Family. Your temporary host, Pastor Rod Zwanitzer, here with you. And blessed Ascension Day, when we celebrate our Lord's ascension to the right hand of God on the throne to rule and reign over his church and all things forever and ever. So I encourage each and every one of you, find a church that has an ascension service. If your church doesn't have one, find one. There's a lot of them here in the St. Louis area and probably where you are. Find one, go to it, and you'll be blessed. Faith and Family is a call-in program where we encourage and we thrive on you calling in with your questions and comments. You can do that in the St. Louis area, 314-505-7850, or around the world, 1-800-730-2727. Or you may email us at family@kfuo.org. We'd like to hear from you, your questions on marriage, and especially marriage in India. That's our topic today. Before we go there, too, let me encourage you with an exciting thing here at worldwidekfuo.org. That's our Wi-Fi radio giveaway contest. It works just like a radio, except it needs Wi-Fi. So if you're in a home or a nursing home, whatever, where they have Wi-Fi and so many of them do anymore, and even houses do, you just plug this in, and then you can preset whatever stations you like and listen to probably over 10,000 internet stations, and the best is Worldwide KFUO. So you can listen to us 24/7. We're giving away one a month for the next year, and in the month of May, we're honoring moms everywhere. And so we're giving away one to someone who can give it to their mother. And to enter, all you have to do is go on our website page or our Facebook page, and you'll find complete instructions. So does your mom need a new radio, or she needs a Wi-Fi radio? Check us out, kfuo.org or KFU on Facebook. Our guests today are Pastor Stanley and his wife, Bina. Welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Our pleasure. Well,
thank you from my side, too. Thank you very much.
Good, good. You're like part of the KFUO family, being so close to our own Joni Harwell, right, who we love dearly, who's the director of fundraising and promotion here at Worldwide KFUO. And so let's begin by telling the people where you were raised. Mm-hmm. And I take it you're married, since we're going to talk about married life in India.
Right.
And you have the same last name, so you are married, right?
Yes.
They're smiling and laughing, so that's good. Bina, let's start with you. What part of India did you grow up?
Southern part of India.
Southern part of India. Now, India, as I understand, is quickly becoming the most populated country in the world. And so we all should be very interested in India, as we're trying to become more and more here at Worldwide KFUO, and you're a real blessing to us to help us with that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Tell us, Bina, how did you meet this amazing man?
See, my father, he worked in India, worked in Mumbai. He went to work there, and he searched church, and he find the church Mumbai, Lutheran church. There is a lot of church, of course, but Catholic church. And he won a Lutheran church. He went there, and he met Pastor Stanish's father. He was a pastor over there.
Right. Yeah. Right. So that's how you guys came to meet each other through your dad.
We visit Mumbai when we get vacation at school.
Okay.
And I went two, three times to church, Mumbai church, only the vacation time. Then my father asked, they choose me to be their son's wife.
So what would they call an arranged marriage?
We call arranged marriage,
yeah,
yes.
More goes on over there than here. That's one of the differences that we can explore.
Right.
Yeah, when they first told you that, what'd you think, Bina?
Of course, we girls need for village girls. We always pray for nice husband. Always do, and I believe Jesus brought us together.
good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll bet that your parents were praying that same prayer.
Yes, they are. They are searching. When I got finished my school education, they are ready for my marriage. They are searching. They are waiting, you know, boys to come and ask. And Stanish's father asked, and my parents said, we have to ask my daughter. And they came home, and they asked me. Well, first, I am afraid because city, Mumbai is a city. I am village girl. I am not that not open. You know, village is totally different than city.
Yeah, yeah. Even here, now, when you say village, what would be the population of the village you come from? How many people in the village?
5,000.
Yeah, 5,000.
5,000, so not real small.
No, village is not small. So yeah. House is nearby. We can see
but
everywhere.
But Mumbai, I take it, is a pretty good sized area.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So, Stanish, how long have you been married to this lovely woman?
Well, is it 11 years?
Mm-hmm. 11?
let me ask and get it correct over here.
Yeah, 11 years. Great. Yeah, and you have how many children?
We have two girls. Two.
Boy, are they beautiful.
Oh, yeah, they
Thank
are.
You.
Yeah, yeah.
My eldest one, her name is Catherine Kaina Stanish, and the second one is Riona Vidya Stanish.
So. Oh, those are beautiful names. How old are they?
Kathy is 7 years old, and Riona is 3.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, the wonderful 3-year-olds.
Yes.
that was one of the favorite ages with my daughter. I can just remember her looks. I wish she could always stay like that, but no way. But she's better now than she ever was. Uh-huh. Now, Stanish, how old were you when you got married?
Well, I was 28, if I remember correctly. Yeah, I was 28 when
I got married.
An old man. Yeah, I was an old man, yeah. But I still wanted to be a bachelor, to be very frank, because that was a nice life that I was having. I was kind of shocked when my parents really pulled me out and said that, no, you're going to get married to a girl, and this is the girl that we are going to choose for you. And, I don't know whether I could have said no. I just kept quiet, and I thought that maybe the girl will say no. But as it turned out, Bina said yes, and I was kind of caught in a bind. I just had to marry. So
wow. Now, could either one of you said no to this arrangement, and what would that have done if you would have declined the arrangement?
Like when I finished my plus two, I first Stanish's father asked my parents, and they said. They are asking for their son be your wife, and I don't know about Stanish, but I said no because I want to go to college especially in our family. We girls, we don't go college. We don't go further studies because parents are afraid the girls will go out of the house. Then they will go. They'll find their own husbands and run away from the house. That means love marriage.
Uh-huh.
That is not acceptable in my family. My father and mother, they can't imagine.
So
that.
So going away to college for them was the threat of they lose control of their children.
Right.
And so then that can be problematic.
Right. We
have the same problem here in America.
Yeah. Then that's what they said. No. Then I stayed 2 years at home. Not going to college, then his father to ask again, second time, and ask my father, are you interested? Then Papa said, I have to ask my daughter. Then his father said, if you like it be my son, your son-in-law, you have to send your kid, your daughter to college.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Then Papa let me go to college.
Wow.
He let me and my brother, they said, yeah, you can go to college. Because of his father, I went to college.
Wow. Now, did you graduate, Bina?
Yes, I'm economics.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow. I have a minor in economics. We'll have to talk.
Oh, my. I'm in big trouble.
macro and microeconomics?
Right.
Oh, excellent. Well, we've got something in common then. Wonderful. Now, we want to take a little time, and the majority time, of understanding the practice of marriage in mm-hmm. India, mm-hmm. And maybe contrast that a little bit, as we've already started, with what it's here in the United States. And tell us, Stanish, how long have you guys been here in America?
Well, we have been here since the September of 2008, so it's nearing 5 years now.
Wow.
In September, I think we will be five.
5 years.
Reaching five, yeah. And we will be traveling to India very soon to renew our visas. In case we get it, we'll be back again. So,
yeah, so we're not going to let go of you very easily.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Please pray for us.
Oh, we always do. And so when you first come here to our country, mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of things were different.
Lots.
Yeah. And as you probably already know, a lot of Christians living here, we are shocked and depressed and angry and all those other things about a lot of things that our country has become that she's never been before.
Mm-hmm.
Concerning marriage and the relationships with families and parenting and all that,
mm-hmm.
What did you observe about America, even among Christians, that kind of mm-hmm. caught your attention, different or practices that might have concerned you
mm-hmm.
when you first saw them and experienced them here in the United States?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is without doubt there is a big difference really between marriage here in the United States or family life here in the United States and family life in India. To be very frank, India is a very communitarian, family-oriented culture, and we draw that from the so-called Hindu socio-cultural worldview that we as Indians have. And in that worldview, the Muslims, the Hindus, the Jains, the Buddhists, the Christians, everybody, the Sikhs, everybody are participating in that same kind of worldview with their modifications based on their religious practices. So for us, what we have found is that we are a little more controlling of our families and a little more controlling of our kids than, say, here in the West. The second big difference is the way we kind of try to instruct our children. It's more of a top-down approach. We are more like, hey, do this, do that. And you cannot do this, you cannot do that. And it's not only said through words, but we also perform it through our sticks, you know. So if you don't listen to me, you stand the threat of being beaten.
With a stick,
yeah.
My dad had a belt, a leather belt.
Did he? Oh. Yeah. No, we wouldn't.
Sundry things that he would find.
Yeah, at least our parents didn't beat us with a belt, but the stick was always used. And now things are changing in India, no doubt about that. But still, there is a semblance of instruction that comes from the top down.
Yeah.
Over here, it is a more of a critical approach towards life. That's what I feel. Parents are a little more kind of willing to allow their kids to go a little beyond what we would probably allow our kids to do.
Give them a little more freedom, would you say that?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Give them more freedom. But also the instruction is a little more used through psychological means. Like, hey, don't do this. Hey, don't do that. You try to explain it and give them the understanding that, hey, this is wrong and this is bad and this is not the right thing.
Yeah, like they can grasp this stuff.
Correct. Yeah, as if they can
It's a big question.
Right.
You know, can they understand mm-hmm. what's good for them at that age?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And that's a problem a lot of American parents have.
That is
Bina,
right.
You know, I when I hear that, I kind of say amen to all that, that the community is important in India, and the family is really important.
Yes.
Where it seems like, did you observe here in America, it's kind of individualist.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. When we came first, we stayed at Andy's uncle's house.
Joe Uncle and Johnny's house
and I look at neighbors in India. We always together, you know, our house nearby the next house, their children always my house, we always their house, we like together. When we came in Uncle and Johnny, Andy and Joe Uncle's house, is everybody's doing their own kind of stuff.
Yeah, irregardless of who's lives right next to you down the street.
I don't know
yeah.
who's now after four and a half years, Kathy going to school. Because of that, I have school. Kathy's friends, families, we say hi, hello. That's it. For in India, it's not like that. We know like miles and miles people. We know them. We talk them. You know,
yeah.
That's all together.
Yeah. And you know, I'm told, and I can remember a little bit in my lifetime where that was the case, that you pretty well knew everybody around you, even for quite a ways. And you know what's even strange is that early on, then we really had community congregations, community churches, where people would even walk to church.
Right.
Where now, you know, that's gone, and you need big parking lots because they're regional churches where they come from. People from Illinois come to St. Louis area, and people from St. Louis go to church in Illinois. I mean, it's strange, right? So that's a big difference.
Yes.
Hinduism is the big religion in India. Is that right? Still the dominant religion there?
That is true.
Yes.
And so let's talk about, and you kind of set this up for us, that Hindu it kind of drives a lot of society, would you still say, in India, and kind of makes this community and family orientation stick. And then everybody else, as you kind of said, their worldviews, Muslim or Christian and all the rest, kind of fit in within that overarching framework.
Right.
So how would you describe, Stanish, the basic approach to marriage within Hinduism?
Well, see, a marriage is considered a very sacred institution within Hinduism. Basically, the idea for the Hindu is that a marriage is for the procreation of family, for the procreation especially of children. And along those lines, it is mainly procreation of sons, because the son is basically what drives the Hindu family unit. Whether it comes to normal day-to-day life, but more importantly, when issues like death comes in, then it's the male child who can do the rituals necessary so that the father's atman, or you know, the soul can have the proper necessary rituals that could be done for him to be liberated from the worldly cycle of karma that he is, or samsara, which he is.
So he has the authority and the position to execute that important thing.
That is right. And so as a result, what happens is marriage is seen as a sacred institution where people come together, and the wives basically have the job of procreating as many sons for the family as possible. So that's basically the idea over there. And of course, the Christian marriage and Christian way of looking at family is kind of different. It is seen as, of course, people coming together, but also seen as a way in which God functions within a family unit and blesses them in their life. Also, in the Hindu family unit, you will find the joint family system pretty strong. So the marriage is where the woman is married and taken into a family where there is already probably other married women around. And that was more of the general case, especially till the 90s. But after the 90s, with the economic liberalization of India, nuclear families are becoming a little more, increasing more in number compared to probably before the 90s.
Okay. Let's encourage the listener out there, too, to call us with your questions or comments on marriage and Hinduism in India, and just biblical marriage. We'll, Pastor Stanish and I, and Bina, will try to take all those and answer them as best we can. So call us, 314-505-7850, or worldwide, 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us at family@kfuo.org. Now, I was just looking up in the Wikipedia about marriage and Hinduism, and so I'll try to let you know how my Indian sounds, and your English is so great, you two. It says here, Hindu marriage believes that two individuals are joined for life, so that they can pursue dharma, duty, artha, possessions, kama, physical desires, and moksha.
Moksha.
Ultimate spiritual release. That's what you're talking about.
The
son being able to perform the rites and the ceremonies, correct? And it says that they originally recognized legally opposite sex, male and female. But that's somewhat changed in India. Is same-sex marriage at all becoming an issue over there like it is here in the United States?
Mm-hmm. Well, according to the legal system, we follow the British legal system because the British kind of ruled India for 175 years. And so we carry a lot of those British values within our legal system.
That's why I always love your voice. I can hear a little British
in it.
I love it. Oh,
thank you.
I love it.
So because of that, what happens is that something like homosexuality was kind of defined by those British rules and was considered the unnatural way to have cohabitation between two individuals. Of late, I think it's 2011, 2012, because of especially the Western values kind of which have come up in a very big way in India, especially in the last 10, 15 years, and the roles played by the media and also the NGOs, non-governmental organizations, which draw a lot of money and support from the West. The concerns of the gays and the lesbians are kind of coming into the central discussion within India, and as a result, I think the Supreme Court has passed certain laws saying that and litigated in such a way that homosexual relationship or that kind of a sexual cohabitation is not considered illegal anymore. So those issues are still there. It's still in discussion, and the government is probably just looking at it and seeing how they could kind of deal with this issue.
And you know what's amazing hearing that is that, you know, we are really based on British common law in our country, and so is India. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we to hear that you've been influenced from the West, wow, that's scary. That's scary.
Right.
You know, we're coming to a break, but before we do, Bina, has the role of women and wives and mothers, has it changed or is it changing at all in India, do you think?
It's changing lots.
Lots?
Mm-hmm.
In what major ways would you think?
Before, the women stay home and take care of the family and take care of the household, watching the kids. Taking care of the kids and taking care of the husband.
Right.
Stay home, just like my mom. She stayed home. She never worked.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And my papa worked. He went far away, city, and worked.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And now it's not like that. If I grew up, you know, after school, you have to get married. But I said, no, I want to study. Because of his father said, you have to go to her, you have to let her go to study, that freedom, I like it. That's why second time they asked for the proposal, I said yes.
But that maybe in previous times would not have happened.
No.
The woman's real role was to be married and take care of her husband and the
household and watch their kids.
Okay.
And that's it.
Okay.
Now it's changing. Everybody wants to change. They don't want inside the shells. I don't want to be like that.
Yeah.
It's my... Now the girls want to go to college and study. Now the women's is studying more than men. I believe so.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And they are getting jobs and they are working outside and they come home, they work inside too.
Okay.
Taking care of the kids too.
So like in our country, becoming a lot of two career homes, wife and the husband.
That is right.
Two incomes. So yeah, great. So let's pause right there and take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll talk more about marriage in India and comparing that with Hinduism, and also talk about what the Stanleys have found in American marriage here on Faith and Family. And please call in or email in your questions, your comments. We'd love to have them. Email us at family@kfuo.org or call anywhere in the world, 1-800-730-2727. That's toll-free, won't cost you a penny. Or if you're in the St. Louis area, 314-505-7850. And blessings on this Ascension Day when Jesus is not only crucified and raised, victorious for our sins, he is now ascended to the right hand of God the Father, where he rules forever and ever. Amen. So come back with us quickly here on Faith and Family.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Australian doctors have come up with a cheap and simple answer to a serious health problem with premature babies. NEC is when the baby's gut has bad bacteria instead of the good stuff, and it can be a deadly condition. It can also cause cerebral palsy. There's no effective treatment to cure NEC, so they concentrate on preventing it. The doctors found that giving a preemie probiotic supplement with breast milk through a feeding tube is successful. So much, they now routinely give it to all babies born 8 weeks or more premature. At first, it cut the cases of bowel disease in half, but now all babies given the probiotic at Nepean Hospital have avoided the disease. The treatment also reduces inflammation. Let's hope that American hospitals are soon giving it here.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Worldwide KFUO salutes our day sponsor on this Thursday, May 9th, 2013. Today's day sponsors are John and Liddell Agrippino. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to KFUO in thanksgiving to the Lord for all of His blessings as they celebrate their 32nd wedding anniversary. Once again, we say thank you to John and Liddell Agrippino of Maryland Heights, Missouri, today's Worldwide KFUO Day sponsor.
You plan your day, plan a meal, and even plan for a vacation. But have you made plans to control your blood pressure? One out of every three Missourians has high blood pressure. Many don't know it. Over half don't have it under control. High blood pressure is a leading risk factor for heart attack and stroke. Work with your doctor on a plan to get your blood pressure under control. It's life-saving.
We care. A message from your local public health agency and the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services.
I'm Roland Lettner. Coming up on this weekend's edition of Studio A, it's the 450th anniversary year of the conclusion of the Council of Trent. Now, the Council of Trent can be a very personal thing for many Lutherans. What was that council? What did it accomplish? Also, beer and the Bible. Well, beer and Lutherans, also an interesting topic. As well as the hunt for Hitler's warship, all coming up this weekend on Studio A.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
A judge has ruled that cheerleaders at a Southeast Texas high school can display banners emblazoned with Bible verses at football games. State District Judge Steve Thomas ruled that the Koontz High School cheerleaders' banners are constitutionally permissible. The dispute began last football season when the school district barred cheerleaders from using run-through banners that displayed messages such as, "If God is for us, who can be against us?" Attorney Hiram Sasser of Liberty Institute, which represented the cheerleaders, says,
"This is a great victory, not only for these cheerleaders, but for the religious liberty of student leaders across the country."
The Freedom From Religion Foundation had called the banners an unconstitutional endorsement of religion. Liberty Institute responded that the school district's ban was unconstitutional because it violated the cheerleaders' free speech and religious rights.
"We're very thankful that the court ruled in our favor, vindicating the rights of the cheerleaders and restoring religious liberty in Koontz."
I'm Steve Coleman.
Thanks for sticking with us on Faith and Family here on Worldwide KFUO. Blessed Ascension Day to you. And we were going to pass this on. One of our staff is a member at Ascension Lutheran Church here in Southwest St. Louis. And they have an Ascension service tonight. You're all invited, 7 p.m. at Donovan and Eichelberger. That's the coordinates where their church is. And you can call them, 314-832-5600. But before you do that, call us at 314-505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, or get those happy word processor fingers going on your iPhone, your smartphone, on your laptop, whatever, and email us your questions on marriage in Hinduism or marriage in India or even marriage. Pastor Stanish Stanley and his wife Bina and I will try to take care of that. Let's talk about the ceremony, the wedding ceremony. A lot of people really enjoy and kind of focus on that. Bina, what describe the ceremony that you and Stanish had.
We had a really nice wedding. I really enjoyed it. And our wedding is really Christian way, a church. And our wedding, like, is 2 days. Like
2 days? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Like wedding day, before the wedding day, the night. We have reception at girls' house. And there, the family are there, then neighbors will come to the wedding.
Where are the guys at when the ladies are doing this?
They're in their house.
They're somewhere else, isolated.
Isolated, yeah, because they are not allowed, the male is not allowed to come to the female's wedding reception, which takes place prior to the wedding day.
The day before that.
Yeah, there's girls with the cute saris and jewels. And
time to really dress up and get together as ladies.
Yeah, we are the queen that day.
Now, what would you do when you gathered in these beautiful outfits? What activities, what kind of things would you be doing when they had this ladies' reception?
We have, at the evening, like 3 o'clock we start. They come, they put their dresses on. We wear sari. That is take 2 hours to wear. Then we tie our hair and put flowers on our hair and makeups on. Before my marriage, I never put any makeups. And the marriage day evening, the reception, I was so excited. After all done, I look at the mirror. I'm so beautiful. I'm princess today. I'm so happy.
That's great.
Yeah. Then all the ladies come. They'll bring me gift. And they wish us for the best. And the photo taken. And this is fun day.
Just a fun day.
Mm-hmm, fun time. Then the next day, the boys, Stanish and his parents and his relatives, they came to our house, and we went to church. We walked from our house, we walked to the church, and the wedding take place there.
Now, what kind of dress would you have on? I mean, not dress, but what kind of clothes would you have on that day?
The wedding day, we normally wear saris, and normally. Color sari, any kind of color. We don't prefer.
So the bride doesn't say we're all going to wear blue. You wear whatever color you want.
Yeah, whatever color we want.
What color did you choose?
I didn't choose. His mom, his parents bought me the wedding dress.
Oh, nice.
They have to bring the wedding dress.
Oh, okay. Did you like it?
Oh, yeah. His mom told me that we are going to bring a white sari because his parents came to United States. They saw the wedding with the white gown.
The symbolic of white gown.
Right, right.
Nice.
They said Christian wedding is in the white dress. Uh-huh. Then I like sari. Then sari is a common dress in India, especially the wedding. Then they brought me the white wedding sari.
How nice. Mm-hmm. Nice way for the groom's parents to participate in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
His mom and his parents, they did a big role in our lives. They choose me and his wife, and I'm God. I believe God brought us together with
through them,
yes.
Yeah.
And
what would the role been of your parents besides hosting this ladies' reception for all the princesses?
At my house, we have a small house, but whatever we have, we are grateful for that. With the evening reception at our house, with small area, but a lot of people, you have we can imagine small house with little space
with people.
And a lot of people with the music too loud.
And beautiful clothed ladies.
Yeah, and everybody's very, very best clothes. and there is food, and just enjoy it, like festival.
Celebration.
Yeah, enjoy.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Now, Stanish, how would you have been dressed on the wedding day? Well, not a sari, I take it.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. Definitely, I wouldn't wear a sari. Mostly South Indian men, before the 70s, 80s, what would happen is they would wear a lungi, which would be a kind of a plain cloth that they would just tie around their waist. And then they would wear a shirt, probably, for their wedding. But with more westernization, and see, I kind of grew up in Mumbai. So, I was born and brought up in Mumbai. I had Mumbai values, really. And I'm not, even though my parents are South Indian, I'm not really that much, I have never identified that much with Southern kind of influences. So, for me, naturally, the conclusion was that I would be wearing a coat and a suit, just the way normal Indian weddings, especially in the northern parts of India, would take place. But in the northern parts also, it's different. They wear it the coat, and instead of the coat and suit, they would have a pant, and also they would have a sherwani, which would be a longer kind of dress.
Okay.
Which is more thicker, just like
outer garment type thing.
Correct.
Yeah. Do they still have the Nehru jackets over there?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's pretty
popular. That hit America when the Beatles started doing it.
Oh, is it?
British again.
Uh-huh.
And then everybody over here, teenagers, were wearing Nehru things.
Nehru things,
yeah,
okay.
Didn't even know it was Indian,
Right.
But it was a cool thing to do.
Correct. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is. Especially it was made very popular by our late Prime Minister, Rajiv Gandhi. He also wore something of that sort. And that was pretty, of course, a more curtailed version of that. Nehru jackets were a little more longer, reaching your knees, but this one was different. It's more of a coat.
Okay, now we're all dressed wonderfully, mm-hmm. and so you walk together, mm-hmm. Bride and groom to the church,
mm-hmm.
and all the wedding parties walking with you, I guess.
Mm-hmm. My cousin's sister, my cousin's wives, they brought me inside the church.
Okay.
And
I was already there.
He mm-hmm. was already there with his cousin and with families and mommy.
Would you have been able to see her all dressed up and her makeup and that before that moment?
Because in our country, that's kind of
one of the traditions.
No, we are not supposed to do
that. Not see the bride until she comes down the aisle.
That's right.
We're doing the same
Correct.
Kind of thing.
We've got to just sit in that chair facing the altar and just sit over there quietly, even not even turn back and have a look. Let her come and sit next to you, and then you can probably have a look. So it was a very nervous moment, really. It was. And see, one of the most important things is that we, within an Indian setting, the parents will decide the bride for you. Okay, that is true. And then, but at the same time, now they've kind of modified and made some changes to that you can at least talk to the girl when that decision is being made. You might talk over the phone, or you might go. There is one important ceremony that is where you go and talk to the girl's family that this is the son, and it's a formal conversation that takes place. That hey, we have come over here to see whether you would be willing to give your girl in marriage. And at that particular point, the girl and the boy could meet and talk in a particular room where probably the girl's relatives are standing by the side, just at least watching whether you guys are not doing anything untoward.
Not totally in private, but
right, not totally private, but at least there is a small conversation that is struck to find out whether there is some kind of compatibility. The major difference between a Christian wedding and a Hindu wedding would be that when these processes take place, initially, before the marriage is set up and everything and the girl is decided, they would always look at your horoscopes. So the astrological chart is so important. It has to kind of match.
Right.
For the girl and the boy. And if that doesn't match, then the wedding is off. There is no possibility of them getting together. So the wedding is, or those kind of plans are dropped. But within a Christian setting, all those ideas are not there. We don't have an astrological chart or a horoscope chart made for myself or for Bina. It is just, you saw the girl, you like it, you like her, and if the girl says yes and the boy is yes, the parents have already decided, and they just go ahead with the wedding.
So now in the actual ceremony, the service itself mm-hmm. of wedding, what are the highlights? Is there an exchange of vows?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Same way, like here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we have one tradition, like before the marriage takes place, a pastor will call called my father, and father came to the front of the altar and take my hands and hold his hands and give to attached together. And that means holding hands together, that means I am giving my daughter to you.
Okay.
That takes place in the church.
Okay.
In front of everyone.
It used to be kind of the standard thing, but it's become kind of optional here where, you know, the father of the bride escorts her up mm-hmm. to the front mm-hmm. where most of the wedding party is already there. Mm-hmm. And then the groom is there. And before he gives his daughter, the bride, over to the groom, you know, the pastor will ask him, who gives this woman to be married?
Mm-hmm.
And the father will say, my wife and I.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of have a similar thing, but you're saying it's kind of more vital, more important in the Indian setting, right?
Yes.
Sure. Yes.
More important.
Yes.
The
yes.
pastor will call, before the wedding, pastor will call the father,
mm-hmm.
girl's father, and, you know, and ask to do that. Then my father did to us, yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. See, in all this, I think that is very important, that one thing that we should remember about Indian society and Indian marriages, and also for that matter, Indian family, is that the wise man tradition is pretty strong in our culture. It is that the elders are wiser than the youngsters.
They should be.
the understanding, and that comes from Hindu culture, the understanding is that the elder people have seen life more than the younger people. And as a result, they have seen the various things and you know, that life has to offer. They are more wiser than you,
mm-hmm.
so they will make the right decision for you.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why the young kids, or for that matter, in this case, I am 28. I am not a young kid anymore, but still, I am dependent on my parents to make that final decision for me as to who would be the right girl for me and for my life.
Because, you know, even in our country, Stanish, as I heard you saying that, you know, it used to be that the groom would have to go to the father mm-hmm. of a prospective bride and ask for her hand.
Oh, really? Uh-huh.
And then sometimes, I know even today where parents say, knowing their child really well,
mm-hmm.
I don't think this person that you want to be married to is going to be good for you.
Right.
and you know, the young person is like, wow,
no.
I think I know better
right.
what I want, and the parent says,
correct.
I don't think so.
Right.
You know, we've been married for a long time. We know you really well. We know your strengths. We know your weaknesses.
Sure.
We know what we think you need
mm-hmm.
to balance out that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really fascinating.
Right.
So now, does the pastor give a little wedding message, a little sermon in the service over there?
Yes.
Sure, yeah. The pastor will give a small message. But keeping this this small ceremony that we were talking about the father giving the hand, it comes in sync with that tradition. That is, here you have the father carrying the holding the bride and bringing her in. We don't have that. The girl is brought by her
cousins.
By her sisters and cousins and everybody,
sisters,
and
yes.
made to sit
yeah.
in front. The father is just called to kind of give her hand to the husband. Who will now, it's a symbolic understanding that till now I was responsible for my daughter. I took care of her, and I cared for her, and I provided everything, and I have kept her pure, and her chastity and everything is fine, and now I have given it to you. Now you take care of her.
Now it's your responsibility.
That is right. So there is a switch of responsibility from father to
is there husband. A dowry do you know
sure.
what that word
involved yes.
in Indian is laughing
oh man no, that's a big thing. Dowry is a very big thing in India, and unfortunately it has been misused in many big way in very badly. It also comes from a Hindu setting. The understanding is that the stri dhan, the stri means woman, dhan means wealth. It is the woman's wealth. In ancient times, it was understood as the portable gifts, you know, the ornaments or the vessels and all that, that the girl would be given, would be taken by the girl to her in-law's house. See, in North India, the understanding is that the girl has to be married off as far away as possible, not in near locations, whereas in the southern part, it's different. You can get married with with cross cousins, with parallel cousins, and all that kind of stuff. Mm. So what happens is that these women would carry with them, because they do not have any rights or any control over the ancestral estate, the father's estate or the mother's estate. So the woman has to carry whatever she can get, her gifts, which she can have as possession for herself, and she can carry it into her in-law's house, which will be a completely new house, you know. But as times have progressed and as things have changed today, and especially in the late 60s, 70s, it became really bad because people started almost killing brides for wealth and for bringing sufficient dowry. And the sad thing is that it is a reality which is all encompassing all religious and cultural groups within India. You know, it's not only curtailed to Hindus. It doesn't remain there. It is even the Christians have it, even the Jains, Sikhs, everybody do it, and interestingly, even the Muslims do it. See, in fact, the Muslim, according to Muslim rules, it is different. It is a mehr which is given as a bride price to the girl's family by the prospective husband or his family. But we have heard a lot of there have been reports which have been brought out by the news outlets, pointing out that no, now it's also the other way around. There are exorbitant dowries charged and asked for by Muslims too. So it is a pan-India, pan-religious thing within India.
Sure. Yep. Now, what's big here in the United States, and I don't know if you've experienced, is not so much the wedding ceremony, mm-hmm. but the party, the reception, the ceremony after it. Mm-hmm. Do they have that at your wedding? I mean, do you go somewhere and celebrate this blessed day, the wedding in India?
After wedding, that same day, after wedding, I have to go to his house, wherever.
His parents' house?
Yes.
Okay.
Parents' house. Then they have a reception over there after marriage evening. There, my family can come. They will come with whatever I got the previous night, the gifts. They bring their all the gifts that the same day, wedding day evening, at his house. Then we have the pastor will pray, and after that my mom come friend, and she hold my hand and give to his mother's hands.
Mm.
That means,
and this is done in the kitchen, right?
In the kitchen. Mm-hmm. They are doing that. She is my daughter. Now she is your daughter.
Why isn't that nice?
Now you have to take care of, and you have to be nice. Isn't that nice?
Mother-in-law has to be nice and treat her as her own child.
Mm-hmm. Over there, I would kind of mention that the women's role is basically, you know, a homemaker within a Hindu setting, with Hindu cultural setting, and that is kind of, as I said, it is moving into other religious dimensions too, religious groups too. So this is done in the kitchen because that is her area. You know, she's the homemaker. She is the one who runs the kitchen of the house, who runs the house really, because she takes care of the kids. As a result, over here, within a Hindu setting, because you're dealing with a joint family system, what would happen is the eldest woman, it could be the mother of the house, it could be the eldest son's wife, she becomes the boss of the house. You see, so for the women who are coming into the house will be under the eldest woman over there, the mother, for instance, the mother-in-law of the house, and that symbolism you will also see within in South India, within Christian households also, but to a lesser degree, meaning different things.
Sure. That's fascinating. This strong appreciation and respect for your parents.
Mm-hmm.
That's big.
I'm almost hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, a little bit of Genesis where it says, mm-hmm. Leave your mother and your father, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. cleave to your new family, your husband and your wife, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And some of that symbolism sounds like it's supporting that biblical view.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, in fact, Indian. If you look at Indian family life, Indian marriages, and Indian Hindu culture, especially amongst, because India is divided, Hindu society bases itself on castes, you know.
Right.
So especially when you look into the higher castes of the higher groups of Indian society, you will find a strange connection or parallelism with Victorian British values. Especially like the woman has to be chaste, her chastity has to be, she has to be pure, she cannot kind of just go out and do things as she feels like. She cannot be a vagabond kind of a figure, you know. She has to talk in a particular way, wear a particular dress, she's got to hold on to certain values, she has to focus on her children. So and we have seen that especially the missionary movement in India took place within a setting of Victorian Christian values, and there was a strange resemblance and a parallelism with Sanskritized high caste Indian society values. So, mm-hmm. And especially the lower groups were not like that. The lower groups, the women worked in the fields. They were supposed to provide for the family. They struggled along with their husbands to make ends meet. You know, so they were more mobile.
Yeah.
But with Christianity coming into these groups, and because of that, the women were also kind of, you know, misused, or kind of the landlords kind of took advantage of them, and that kind of also reflected on their low status. But here, what is happening is with Christianity coming in, those values started coming into these low caste families also, and they also were kind of coming up slowly into the above in their social
ladder. So
kind
of a meeting somewhere in the middle here.
That is right. Mm-hmm.
Between the castes.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, Stanish, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that when I was honored to meet and interview Dr. Samuel,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the former president
right.
of a large Lutheran church in India,
right.
he was telling me how amazingly Christianity was starting to break through some of that caste system, and where
sure.
people could feel, as you were saying, kind of equality in Jesus Christ.
Definitely, yep.
And so in marriage, even that's important too, isn't
100%,
it?
100%, yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like Christianity is making some slow inroads.
It is. Definitely, Christianity has made not only slow but significant inroads into Indian society. But this other side of the matter is, or the other side of the coin is that the Hindus have benefited a lot from its interactions with Christianity. They have taken a lot of those values and kind of cut out a lot of their superstitions and cultural practices, modified it here and there, you know?
Yeah.
And it has benefited them also a lot. But I don't know whether they would be willing to appreciate that and say that yes, and be truthful and say that yes, this has helped us. But the fact is, for everybody to see, many of the superstitions about women, for instance, you know, have all gone as a result of Christianity, because of Christian education, because of Western education, mm-hmm. you know, and that has helped them a lot, and it has helped us also a lot. For example, us who come from low caste Christian communities, Christianity really helped us also to understand that, hey, we are people of worth. Our men and women are also of the same worth, just like high caste Hindus, you see? Mm-hmm. So that has helped us a lot, no doubt about that.
And Jesus' eyes and his redeeming blessings and benefits were all the same, which
That's
is
right.
wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So Bina and Pastor Stanish Stanley, thanks for being our guest today on Faith and Family. And I learned a lot about marriage in India and the Hindu practices,
mm-hmm.
and your Christian wedding ceremony and some of your life together. So thanks for being our guest today, and hope we can have you back soon. Blessings on your trip to India. We'll welcome you back soon.
Thank you so much.
Join us tomorrow when we will talk with two married couples, one that's only been married for 9 months and one that's been married for 60 years, comparing notes. So that'll be fun on tomorrow's Faith and Family. Go worship on this Ascension Day and enter our Wi-Fi radio giveaway contest, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. God's blessings on your day.